This Week in America with Rick Bratton. Issues that matter to you. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Six suicides, one sexual predator, and a town that won't talk about it. First-time filmmaker Paige Goldberg-Tomac dives into the past and shines a light on a sexual predator at one of the nation's most prestigious schools in her award-winning documentary, What Haunts Us. Paige is our guest on today's This Week in America. The class of 1979, a Porter God school in Charleston, South Carolina, graduated 49 boys. Within 35 years, six of them had died by suicide. When Paige hears about the suicide of yet another former schoolmate, she begins to take a deeper look at the past and starts to ask questions that no one in Charleston wants to answer. We talk about it next on This Week in America.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.
Want to fly somewhere? Looking for cheap flights or cheap tickets? Then call. That's right. Call the low-cost airline travel hotline now for prices so low, we can't publish them anywhere. Low-cost airlines has all kinds of cheap travel deals. Fly domestically and save up to 75%. You can even fly internationally and save even more. Yes, fly anywhere in the world and save a lot of money on your plane tickets. We'll even save you money with cheap travel deals on hotels, rental cars, even complete travel packages. So don't book your tickets until you call us first for the absolute cheapest prices on U.S. and international airline tickets and hotels. Call right now for prices so low they can't be published. Travel experts are here 24/7 to help.
Call 800-298-0306, 800-298-0306, 800-298-0306, 800-298-0306.
Doc, you gotta give it to me straight.
All right.
Because I'm dying here. I mean, take a look at this letter from the IRS.
Oh, my.
This is killing me, Doc. I tell you, it's killing me.
Cheer up, my friend.
Huh?
The tax doctor is here. My diagnosis tells me that you're going to be just fine.
Really?
The tax doctor will not rest until we find you the best possible tax settlement.
Really, Doc?
Guaranteed.
If the IRS claims you owe them $10,000 or more in business or personal back taxes, call a tax doctor right now. We could save you up to 75% if you qualify. Guaranteed or you pay nothing. Call right now for free details.
800-659-5731. 800-659-5731. 800-659-5731. That's 800-659-5731.
Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to coast, This Week in America, online, thisweekinamerica.us. The new documentary, What Haunts Us, looks at the 1979 graduating class of the prestigious Porter God School in Charleston, South Carolina. 49 boys graduated that year. Within 35 years, six committed suicide. An horrific nightmare happened at this seemingly perfect high school that no one wants to talk about to this day. When Paige Goldberg-Tomac, a proud Porter God alum, hears that another former student has killed himself, she decides to look into the past and uncovers the truth about a beloved teacher who molested many of his students for years. How could this happen in plain view? The result, the award-winning film, What Haunts Us, directed and produced by Paige in theaters and airing on Stars. For Paige, advocacy, nothing new. When her son Jackson developed a severe case of eczema soon after his birth, she began looking for environmental causes after failing to find relief or answers in traditional treatments. Ridding her home of environmental toxins, she cured her son. Determined to help others, she founded the Little Seed in 2007. That's a one-stop eco-conscious store in Los Angeles that helped raise awareness about the dangers of toxic chemicals in homes. And now a first-time filmmaker shining a light on a sexual predator at one of the nation's most prestigious schools in the award-winning film What Haunts Us, Paige Goldberg-Tomac with us on This Week in America. Hi, Paige. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
It is our pleasure. This is such an important film that you've done. And I talked about how this sort of started when you heard about the death of another student. Why did you feel at that time it was really important for you to find out what really happened?
Well, you know, it was interesting. We all knew. We all sort of knew what had happened at our school.
Yes.
You know, we all grew up in, we were in the 80s in Charleston, South Carolina, at Porter Gowd, which was a school. I loved my school. And here was this charismatic and dynamic teacher, Eddie Fisher, who I really liked. And, you know, and then I left. I graduated and moved on and grew up. And years later, after I graduated, a kid from my school, Gary Glover, who's in my film, came out and said Eddie Fisher molested me from ages 9 to 19. The school knew about it, and they covered it up. Eddie Fisher, the school was sued. Eddie Fisher went to prison. So my group knew about it. I remember us sort of talking about it a little bit, but we didn't want to talk about it too much because, you know, it's uncomfortable. It's icky. No one really likes talking about this stuff. So we didn't. And then in 2006, I became a mom, and the world became a really, really different place.
Everything changes.
I mean, you see the world really differently. And I remember thinking, you know, here I am, like you told the story about me starting the Little Seed and starting an eco-conscious store and all that stuff. And I started thinking, well, I certainly know, like, the right car seat to use, and I know the safe baby bottles to use and the right mattresses to buy and the parenting classes to go to. But I didn't know how to protect my child from a predator. Here I was really in charge of someone now. And I didn't know because I didn't learn anything from Porter Gowd. We never talked about it. So I thought, my goodness, I need to kind of take a deep dive into my past and understand how it was allowed to happen in order to protect my child in the present.
I understand.
And
during that period,
yeah,
you're watching television and you see Jerry Sandusky, and that's 2012, and that sort of hits you too, because that's the classic case of, I sort of knew what was going on. Maybe I should have said something and I didn't. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, then it keeps going. And that was obviously the case with Sandusky as well.
Oh, and Sandusky, by the way, I mean, I remember that moment clear as day. I saw his picture on the news, and he looked a lot like Eddie Fisher to me. And I was like, oh, this happens a lot. Like, this is,
yes.
This can happen in any city, in any school, any time. You know, it's not just an isolated incident that happened in Charleston, South Carolina in the 80s. I mean, we need to be vigilant. We need to be aware. And so that gave me just motivation to continue understanding the story and decided to make a film about it.
When you look at Eddie Fisher, he was described as charismatic. He looked like a movie star. He was the cool teacher. He wasn't a creepy-looking guy that maybe you had some suspicions. And he went about it sort of the textbook way, when he actually groomed. He got to be family member, friends of family members, so he could get close to the children.
Absolutely. Of course. I mean, it's the same story everywhere.
Yes.
He charming man. I remember him so well. I liked him. He was fun. If you were a kid who hung out with Eddie Fisher, you were one of the cool kids. I mean, he had everybody kind of snowed.
You know, there's a quote in the film where someone says, you know, once he knew the administration had his back, it was open field running. He obviously felt that he could get away with this, and then the obvious question is, why did the school administration allow this? They certainly were aware of the rumors as well.
I mean, that's the question, isn't it? I mean, it's an amazing line that David Flowers, one of the attorneys for Gary Glover, says, open field running. I mean, the second he had the he knew that he wasn't going to get in trouble for what he did. I mean, people were going to the school and saying this was happening, and they just turned the other way. I mean, they decided, you know, to let it roll. I think they were, I can't imagine that, but it did happen. And I think it's a case where the institution was valued over the individual. So, you know, the notion that a couple of kids were hurt didn't really matter to anybody. But look what happened.
We're talking about the new film, What Haunts Us, a Paige Goldberg-Tolmach film, producer, director. She's with us on This Week in America. You can find all the information at our website, thisweekinamerica.us. When you started this process, when you decided, I'm going to pull back the curtain and I really want to find out how this was allowed to continue, did you have any idea where this journey was going to take you?
No, not at all. I mean, that was kind of the extraordinary part. I mean, I started looking into it and I thought, all these crazy things that happened that I didn't know about. And, well, my classmates really deserve to know the truth and I want to tell the story. And one of the first things I did was I went to the school and I said, listen, I'm going to make this film. I want you to be in it with me. Let's do it together. Let's show the world that this, we embrace our past, and that's why it's not going to happen again, and this is how you protect kids. I mean, I really had you know, this is what I thought the movie was going to be about. And I remember coming back to Los Angeles and getting a call from the attorneys, head of the board, and the head of the board, and saying, you know, thanks, but no thanks, I'm not going to be in your movie. And I mean, I remember that moment really clearly because I hung up the phone. I started crying. I was like, oh, my God, they don't want to be in the movie. Like, how could they not do this? And now I don't have a movie. Like, what's the movie about? I don't know what to do. And for about a week or so, I walked around like, oh, my movie's over. I don't have a movie. I don't understand. Wow, why don't I get to tell the story? And then all of a sudden, it dawned on me, and I was like, oh, that's the movie. Silence became a character in my film because Portergat still didn't want to talk about it. And that's what I needed to highlight.
Well, silence was so much of the story. Is it still a big part of the story, even with all of this publicity and the movie coming out? And a few months ago, you did the festival circuit where the movie was reviewed very favorably and watched by many people. Is silence still a problem? Or in Charleston, are people beginning to realize we can't let this happen again?
Oh, I think people definitely don't want this to happen again. And I think, you know, people are motivated. People are grateful about this film. I think it's helped to sort of start to release the ghost that is, you know, as we say in the film, it's haunted us, for all of us, for so long. But I do think that there's a tremendous amount of silence everywhere. I mean, you know, look at the world right now. Look what's happening in our world right now. I mean, the notion that silence is complicity is something that we really need to understand. And I want to be someone who stands up for others. I'm raising a son, a good son, to be a great man, hopefully, who also stands up for himself and stands up for others. I mean, I want to role model that for him, and I want people to feel, you know, to understand that that's the way we take care of each other in this world. I mean, that's what I've discovered, and hopefully the film will help do that.
We learn about silence. I mentioned the bystanders, the fact that you go back in your mind and you're thinking, I should have said something. We see something else in the film that often happens with predators. They're shuffled from one place to another without anybody addressing the problem head on. Eddie was allowed to resign and went to another school.
Yep. He was not fired. When Portergat just couldn't keep him anymore, they had heard about it. You know, they knew what was going on, but they, like I said, they turned away from that, but it came a point where they just couldn't ignore it anymore, and so they decided to pass him on. It's called passing the trash. It's a common practice. They decided to pass him on to another school with glowing recommendations. They allowed him to resign. They didn't fire him. They didn't put it in his report. They gave him glowing recommendations, so he went on to molest more boys.
Did
at
he?
More schools.
You know, it's interesting because he has a quote. But here they are with wives and all now. They have to make me look like a villain, and they look like the little saint. Just taking that out of context, it appears he's blaming the victim. Did he ever own up to the magnitude of what he had done?
No, I don't think he was capable of really understanding it. And, you know, there's a really interesting thing that Gary Glover says in the film, which is just always rocks me when I think about it. He said, you know, to this very day, I will always believe that what Portergat did was so much worse than what Eddie Fisher did. Eddie Fisher was sick, but Portergat knew better. And they could have stopped it, but they chose not to. And that was devastating. That was devastating to my school, my friends, my town. You know, it's a sad, sad, sad cautionary tale.
What toll did this take on you emotionally? This took, I understand, about 5 years for you to earn the trust, which had to be a whole experience, you know, unto itself, going in and trying to get the trust of everybody. But in putting this film together, and it's not just you're detached, you're coming in from Hollywood and you're making this movie, this great story that you've heard about, this powerful story that you heard about. You were part of the community. What was the emotional toll this took on you?
Oh, it's super heavy. You know, I kept saying that the whole time. I'm like, what was I thinking? This is my first film. I need to make such a personal
yes.
story. Like, that was really stupid of me. You know, I wasn't like a filmmaker for hire. This is a personal story that I wanted to tell. So, yes, it was really hard for me. It was heartbreaking for me. Every time I interviewed a man or would look at vintage tape of these young men, you know, I saw my son's face. And I'm a mom. I cared about them. I wanted to embrace them all. I spent many, many, many hours crying, and thank God for my husband, who, like, at one point literally, like, that picked me up off the floor, and I remember he said to me one day, he said, listen, this is making you really sad. You are absorbing the sadness. And he goes, and I get it. I totally understand that. He goes, but you have to remember you're someone's mom right now. So you have to try really hard to leave it at the door. You have to come home and leave it at the door. And he goes, and you got to figure out how you're going to do it. He goes, I'm here for you, but you have to be aware of what's going on. And he was right, man. I mean, thank goodness that he was able to say that to me. And he helped me survive it. He really, really did.
There was a point where, as you're talking with people, you're getting some stories, and you had realized you had even suppressed some memories of this through high school.
Yeah, of course. I didn't. There were so many things I didn't remember, and I started, you know, as I started going into the past, these things started to, you know, come out for me. And that was just so shocking. And I think that was sort of my whole life. I must have felt that in me for so many years. It must have always wanted to come out. And you know, feeling like I had never done the right thing, I felt like maybe now making this movie, maybe this is my chance to do the right thing now.
A couple minutes left. We're talking with Paige Goldberg-Tolmach, talking about her movie, What Haunts Us. You said one of the positive things that came out of this, besides getting the message out there and hopefully allowing this never to happen again, the people, the heroes, and the heroes we meet in the film are students.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Yes.
Took them. The grown-ups didn't do anything. It took people like Gary Glover and Carlos Salinas and my friend Mackie Krawczyk. I mean, these are the people who had to. These are the people who had to stand up and make it stop and save lives. They saved lives because of this. I mean, they are the true heroes of this, and it's really a shame. It's a shame that it took them.
You said at an early age you were really impressed as you're watching Roots, and this really made you think, someday I would like to be a filmmaker. Someday I want to tell powerful stories that might people might be afraid to see, but will help change the world. Did you ever think that you actually would be doing that with such a powerful message?
God, no. Isn't that crazy? I mean, I remember watching it, you know, watching it by myself as a young girl and being so moved by Roots, just being so, I mean, sobbing in front of the television the way I did when I was, you know, making my movie. So again, this must have been, you know, born in me so long ago, and just was waiting for the right story. I had no idea that it would be such a personal tale.
You said you wanted the film to start the conversation. Got about 30 seconds left. It has started the conversation nationally. Has it started the conversation, do you feel, in Charleston?
Oh, yes. When we took my film back to Charleston, and which is the really, really important thing for me to do, I wanted to make sure Charleston saw it before the rest of the world got to see it. We had a powerful 400-person screening, and people were just in tears and so grateful. And I've been getting endless messages from people saying thank you. You've helped us start to release the ghost.
What we're talking about is the new film, What Haunts Us, and an award-winning film, a Paige Goldberg-Tolmach film. She's our guest on the program, producer, director. Paige, thank you so much for being with us on the program. Such a powerful, powerful film. Thank you for sharing all the details with us. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for having me and shining a light on this really important issue.
Our pleasure. You're listening to This Week in America online, thisweekinamerica.us.
Make sure you like This Week in America on Facebook, and also you can follow This Week in America on Twitter at TWIA Radio.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.
Want to fly somewhere? Looking for cheap flights or cheap tickets? Then call. That's right. Call the low-cost airline travel hotline now for prices so low, we can't publish them anywhere. Low-cost airlines has all kinds of cheap travel deals. Fly domestically and save up to 75%. You can even fly internationally and save even more. Yes, fly anywhere in the world and save a lot of money on your plane tickets. We'll even save you money with cheap travel deals on hotels, rental cars, even complete travel packages. So don't book your tickets until you call us first for the absolute cheapest prices on U.S. and international airline tickets and hotels. Call right now for prices so low they can't be published. Travel experts are here 24/7 to help.
Call 800-298-0306, 800-298-0306, 800-298-0306, 800-298-0306.
Doc, you gotta give it to me straight.
All right.
Because I'm dying here. I mean, take a look at this letter from the IRS.
Oh, my.
This is killing me, Doc. I tell you, it's killing me.
Cheer up, my friend.
Huh?
The tax doctor is here. My diagnosis tells me that you're going to be just fine.
Really?
The tax doctor will not rest until we find you the best possible tax settlement.
Really, Doc?
Guaranteed.
If the IRS claims you owe them $10,000 or more in business or personal back taxes, call a tax doctor right now. We could save you up to 75% if you qualify. Guaranteed or you pay nothing. Call right now for free details.
800-659-5731. 800-659-5731. 800-659-5731. That's 800-659-5731.
This is an urgent health notice for all residents suffering from back, neck, knee, and wrist pain. You may qualify for a pain-relieving brace at little or no cost to you, but the deadline is fast approaching. Simply call the Health Alert Hotline now.
You heard right. You may qualify for a pain-relieving back, neck, knee, or wrist brace. These items may even be covered by Medicare or your private insurance. The Health Alert Hotline is your brace company. These specialized braces have been tested for pain relief. Call us toll-free right now to determine your eligibility and to learn how to use your private insurance or Medicare to minimize your out-of-pocket cost. Don't wait. If the deadline passes, you may lose your opportunity to get a pain-relieving back, neck, knee, or wrist brace at little or no cost to you.
800-430-9605. 800-430-9605. 800-430-9605. That's 800-430-9605.
Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to coast, This Week in America. The thrilling new crime drama, Shoot the Messenger, from WGN America, has been called a high-quality, edge-of-your-seat drama that takes on topical issues and resonates with all crime enthusiasts. Centering around the complex relationships between crime reporters and the police, starring Elise Levesque as young reporter Daisy Channing, and Lyric Bent as homicide detective Kevin Lutz. Elise received critical acclaim as the corrupt detective Maddie Enger on BBC America's final series of Orphan Black. Extensive TV credits like Stargate Universe, The Originals, Notorious, Motive, Cedar Grove, among many others. Feature films Normal, Spare Change, Sons of Liberty. Lyric, best known to many for his roles in the Saw films as well as the hit Canadian series Rookie Blue. Dozens of feature films and TV credits. Home Again, Four Brothers, Take the Lead, CSI Miami. The miniseries Book of Negroes, the Netflix series She's Gotta Have It, many more roles. Elise and Lyric now starring in Shoot the Messenger from WGN America, 10 Eastern Pacific, and they're with us on This Week in America. Welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
Rick, the check is in the mail for that intro.
Yeah. I'll be looking for it. Thank you. Really looking forward to this series, Shoot the Messenger. And Elise, your character Daisy starts off, what, an eager young reporter. She's working on a story, has a chance to meet with a source that may give her the lead on a really major story, but suddenly what she's drawn into a crime and her life totally changes.
Yeah, I don't think she realizes what is about to go down when she goes to meet the source. And it's the beginning of a very long journey into this rabbit hole of lies and deception and cover-up in the city of Toronto. And it's really interesting and really relevant to, I think, a lot of the things that are hot topics these days, such as, you know, fake news. And things being covered up. So, yeah, very, very relevant story.
Yeah, it touches on... Yeah, Larry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and also the cover-up is also personal, not just professional, because she's also hiding a lot of her own demons from my character, Kevin Lutz, who's the lead detective of this investigation that she witnessed. So it's just interesting when you watch it that the very thing that you you tend to see as deceit, deception, that we also are deceiving and being ratchet, you know, with the people in our own world. So
yeah.
It's just very intriguing to see things unfold and how you can relate.
And it moves.
Every character has something that they're covering, like on some level. So, yeah.
I was going to say, yeah, as you're watching, it seems like the story keeps unfolding and unfolding. It really captures your attention. What are the challenges in working on a series like this, where the story is complex and fast moving in such a big production like this?
Yeah, it was many challenges.
A lot of challenges. Yeah. The story was well written. Doug Sutherland, Jennifer Holness, the producers, creators of the show, and director of the show, the husband and wife team, they did an excellent job with the script, and they did a lot of research, so they did their homework. Mm-hmm. So as we come along and we take now this very well put together piece of material, the challenges that we came up with, what we found were I think more the execution of the story, the shooting of it, because we block shot it, which means that you're telling all 8 episodes simultaneously because of location. It's all location specific when you block shoot. So that was interesting.
Yeah,
and what I found happened was, for me, it made me more involved in the actual world that we're creating, because everything had to be present all the time in order for you to tell a consistent story. There wasn't any chance to break up emotions or break up, you know, the connectivity
right.
that you had, because the consistency won't be there if you do that, because we're shooting all 8 at the same mm-hmm. time based on location.
And also some of the scripts weren't completely finished. So we were sort of flying blind in terms of, like, certain information that would have been, you know, helpful.
But at the same time, I thought that was actually helpful, because
you don't always know everything.
You don't know everything.
Yeah,
everything,
exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
You don't
that's
play
what I
the ending. Yeah. So I thought that was interesting.
Interesting. Yeah. So, like, just like in real life, as a detective, you don't know how it's going to come out. You really, at some point, didn't know how this was going to come out as you were playing this role. I've got about 2 minutes left in the program. It's interesting. I understand the creator's lyric, when they wrote this character, they had you in mind, but they were told, no, this guy doesn't want to play cops anymore. It's never going to happen. And it happened. What was it about this series and this police role that you thought, you know, one more, I like this?
Well, I played a lot of police officers, and they tend to be boring characters because they're formulaic. And so I was, like, through with playing these cops, and I had just come off of 5 years playing a cop, and then I did the Book of Negroes, which just, like, totally opened up my creative palette again and just brought back that juice. And I'm like, this is what I want to be doing. And so when it was brought to me, it was just, oh, I got this series and it's a cop, and I just said no. I didn't know anything about it. I just said I'm done, and then my manager inquired, and we found out that it was Jen and Suds, and I was like, let me look at it. Jen and Suds, I've known them since the inception of my career, and my very first job, my lead job, was Suds' very first writing piece. So we've kind of had this career kind of moving, you know, upwards simultaneously. So once their names were mentioned, I just felt like it was more than out of respect to look at their work, and I'm glad I did, and here we are.
And we will be watching WGN America's thrilling new series, Shoot the Messenger, 10 Eastern Pacific. With us, the stars of the program, Elise Levesque, and young reporter Daisy Channing, her character, and Lyric Ben, homicide detective Kevin Letts. Thank you both very much for being with us on the program. We'll be watching, looking forward to the season of Shoot the Messenger.
And hashtag Shoot the Messenger and at STN WGN America. Let us know what you think of the show at Lyric Ben.
At Elise Levesque.
And let us know, because we really want to hear your views and opinions about the show.
Perfect. Thank you so much for being with us. You're listening to This Week in America online, thisweekinamerica.us.
Make sure you like This Week in America on Facebook, and also you can follow This Week in America on Twitter at TWIA Radio.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.